720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth. Steve Bertrand and I are here with you in for Bill and Wendy today. Thank you for spending part of your Memorial Day with us. I hope whatever you are doing to observe the day, that it is meaningful and important with the people that you care about.
Right, and so you don't say Happy Memorial Day.
You don't say Happy Memorial Day.
I don't think you do either.
It's not a happy...
And it's we fall into those words. And because I ran into it, I'm already off topic, but I ran into it at my son graduated from high school last week, and parents were coming up to me saying, congratulations. And I mistakenly said to a good friend of mine, and he was okay, but I said, you know, I don't feel like I should be congratulated, and I'm not going to congratulate you. You know, your kid graduated. Good thing we congratulate the graduates, but
the onus is on the kid.
Yeah, but there's not another word, you know, to say, I don't know. I mean, I was hearing Mazel Tov a lot where I live, but that's the
sure.
same sort of thing.
There is a degree of I mean, you have to, you don't just drop your kids off at school and then you're done
no,
with it.
Sure,
you know, there's
right.
you help with homework, you do all this stuff. There is some degree, but there should be a word for kind of a secondary
right, and
congratulations.
Not quite an indirect congratulations, because it's their achievement. It's not the parents, but
right.
the parents want to sort of concelebrate, I guess. So we tell each other congratulations. So anyway, Happy Memorial Day. I'm not sure that's the right word for it, but.
It's not. And there, you know, I saw a story written about kind of the history of it and why we should not, and really making the case to remind people, don't say Happy Memorial Day. It has its roots in a Southern tradition. It was originally Decoration Day,
sure,
where you
yeah.
went to graves and, you know, honored fallen soldiers. And so it's not an uplifting day per se.
Later in the program, I'll just throw this out now so people can think of it. I want to open up the phones a little bit for people just to tell us a little story about who they're remembering on this Memorial Day, because I have a couple, and that'll probably help us keep in mind what the holiday is about. But a little bit later, who do you remember, and how are you celebrating this Memorial Day? You know, I had a realtor, of all things, maybe 30 years ago, who was a Vietnam War vet, and he said, you know, I celebrate this day as my second birthday, as another birthday, because I survived the war I was in. And so this Memorial Day, I sort of considered a birthday. So in his case, I guess it would be Happy Memorial Day.
You know, my dad is a combat veteran, and he also has kind of a complicated, you know, relationship with thinking about that kind of stuff. You know, he has some lasting stuff.
Vietnam?
Yes, he was in Vietnam. And he's got some health stuff as a result. And he said, you know, on some level, I went there prepared to not come back and to do that if that's what it took. And to me, every day beyond that is a gift.
Yeah, well, it's nice.
And he's really had that attitude for all these years.
You know, we had such a luxury when we were younger that the veterans were always older, you know, and that changed 15, 16 years ago to where now they are younger than us, or they are among us.
Yeah.
And it's not the past. It's not the so far distant past wars that we remember as kids. Anyway, though, it's summer, right?
It is summer, officially. And, boy, yesterday felt like it. Yesterday was awesome, beautiful, and sunny.
Is it too soon to say it's a little too humid, a little too hot?
Don't go there. Think of yourself in February.
I know.
And you will thank your February self will thank your summertime self.
So my thing is with summer, I live in perpetual regret, so it's...
You seem like such a positive guy,
Bertrand. I know, it's the tears of a clown. But, you know, whenever summer ends, I'm always like, ah, oh, summer's over, and I didn't...
Blank.
Blank.
Yeah.
I didn't go to enough, you know, I thought I was going to go to this festival, or I didn't make it to Milwaukee for their festival, or I didn't go to the beach as much. I always look back and say, remember what I didn't do.
It's like having a summer bucket list.
Yeah, but there it's a summer post, it's an empty bucket. I'm looking
right,
at my empty
bucket.
With
regrets.
So right now, we can fill up the bucket. Here we are, Memorial Day weekend. We're just getting started. So my question to all of you out there, 312-981-7200, on this summer, the summer of 2016.
Let's declare it. Let's lock it down.
Here we are.
Hold each other accountable.
What is it that you want to accomplish this summer?
What do you want to accomplish this summer?
I just want to make it through, Amy. I just want to make it through. No, I want to get... I was driving around the north side a couple of weeks ago. I was up in the Lincoln Square area. And, you know, I've become way too comfortable in the suburbs. And I want to get back into the city. I want to come back into the neighborhoods, just wander around a little bit, see... You know, because I moved out of the city 20 years ago, 19 years ago. And the neighborhoods are very different.
Yeah.
But I still have in my mind what the neighborhoods were 19 years ago.
Sure.
So I want to get back. That's my goal for this summer is to...
Right Where You Were is one of the best bookstores in Chicago. Up in Lincoln Square is the bookseller.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, man. They do so much for... Susie T, that owns that place, she does so much for local authors and really, really fosters a great sense of community in Chicago for writers.
All right. I want to go to restaurants. I want to check out the city of Chicago. How about you?
That's a good one. Well, you know, I'm a summertime person. I love summer. So for winter, I had a very serious goal, and that was I wanted to go through the entire winter without complaining about it once.
Well, you had an easy winter for that.
Even then, I'm just not wired for cold. It's hard for me. And I tend to get the blues. I'm not going to like self-diagnose full-on seasonal affective, but I just get kind of bummed out a lot in the winter, and it's hard to feel motivated. So that was my big project for winter. So when it comes to summer, I'm always about living like there's no tomorrow. So last year, my goal was to be on a boat as much as possible, and I did that. I took some sailing lessons and learned a lot about sailing, and that was pretty cool. So I don't know. I'm traveling a lot this summer, so I don't know that I'm going to be around to do much.
Yeah, I'm traveling too. We're taking a group to Prague and Vienna. A month from today, we leave. So
I have to believe at some point in our lives, we're going to high five in an airport somewhere internationally.
Crisscross somewhere. So, you know, goals for summer here. I'm looking at Pinterest. Some people say read more, go outside, fall in love.
Why summer?
Well, I mean, it's the time, I guess. I don't know.
No. Cuffing season is fall.
Cuffing season?
Yeah, where you get a romance going. You meet someone over the summer, but then you kind of lock it down for winter.
I'd never heard of that, cuffing season. All right, what are your goals for summer? 312-981-7200 is the telephone number. And we'll kick those around. We're going to take a break right after this on 720 WGN.
It's Amy Guth and Steve Bertrand in for Bill and Wendy today. Hope you are having a lovely and meaningful Memorial Day today. Hope you are with the people that you love and doing something that's making you happy. But I hope you're outside too, because it's lovely and warm and wonderful outside.
You hear that Montrose Beach is closed?
I know, because the beach is full.
I love that.
You know,
it's like Epcot Center.
A long time ago, you were talking earlier about changing neighborhoods. I used to live right up there, mm-hmm. not far from Montrose Beach. Nobody was ever up there. You could go there for 4th of July.
I live up there, and I'm shocked that it's literally closed.
Yeah.
It's real.
That exit is closed off of Lakeshore because
Holy
the beach
cow.
Is so packed.
Well, Will Flanagan from Chicago Inno, who was on the business lunch earlier, said he started his day with his dog, his terrier, at the Montrose Beach. Right? They have a dog beach there, don't they?
I don't know.
Yeah, there's, yeah.
I just know about the one on Belmont.
I hope so, because that's where he brought his dog.
But, right.
But he said early this morning it was packed, so it just is the start of it all.
I love dog beaches. I don't have a dog, but I just love to see them because their dogs are so excited to see other dogs, and they have this wonderful, you know, just hedonist in the moment kind of thing, and they just like belly flop into the water. It's so cute. They're sweet.
You don't have dogs, but you go to dog beaches?
No, but I'm out walking or running on the trail, and I like to stop and look at them.
You're so half full.
What?
I look at dogs, and I'm not a big, well, I don't want to go there.
You're not an animal guy, are you?
I'm not a huge animal guy. I mean, we have a dog at home, a Portuguese water dog who we've had for 12 or 13 years.
Big dog, right?
Medium size.
Okay.
Not real big.
Oh, I'm thinking of a Newfoundland. That's what I'm thinking.
No,
giant
no,
dogs, right?
And so Roxy, you know, my kids adore her. My wife loves her. And I do too. But I'm the least of the dog people in the family by far.
Yeah.
And she strained her back last week. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, because she's getting up there.
Sure.
It's not going to last forever. And that's what I'm just dreading is, you know, when that happens. Because I think I'll take it the worst of anyone, even though I'm not the dog person.
Isn't that interesting? And does the dog know that you're not a dog person and therefore relishes attention on you?
I tell her all the time.
I don't like you.
In fact, last night, Roxy, come on. Not me. Go somewhere else.
I feel like animals know, like if someone's being a little bit aloof to them, they know that and they'll kind of want to, like dogs want to earn your affection so
right,
much.
Right, so she hasn't given up?
No.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Trying to win it.
She's still trying to win your affection.
Well, she has more of affection than I let on. I don't know. The phone number is 312-981-7200. We called and just said, what are your goals or your plans for summer? Will has given us a call. Will, welcome to 720 WGN.
Hi, Will.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Great.
Well, here's what happened with me. Two summers ago, at the end of the summer of 2014, I was at a local festival in Evanston where I live. And I just happened to see a local band that was playing at the festival, a band called 16 Candles. Okay. They're an 80s tribute band, essentially, and I'm a kid of the 80s. So, last summer, I made it a point to find out when they would be playing at local festivals, and just about every weekend, they were at a different festival. So it got me going to different neighborhoods and going out into different suburbs just to go see them and have fun in different neighborhoods and different places. And, you know, otherwise, you know, it's like you do when you're living out in the burbs. You get into your own routine and you don't get out very much.
It's poisonous, isn't it, Will?
Well, it can be if you let it be.
So, wait, so you're a groupie for 16 Candles, kind of?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, I'm, like I said, I'm a big fan of 80s music. And they're, you know, an 80s tribute band that's just a lot of fun. This Friday, Greek Fest at St. George's up on the north side.
I love it.
That sounds really fun.
That's on Sheffield, right?
Yep. Yeah. They kick off summer season this week with Greek Fest. And then every weekend after that, pretty much, they're going to be playing somewhere. So it gets me to River North. It gets me out to Oklahoma. It gets me up to Highland Park. Whatever. And I go and I enjoy the festivals, whether it's an art fest or just a regular street fest or whatever. You go out, you have fun, you see some music, you eat some food and have a drink or two. And you get out and you enjoy the summer. I had a blast last summer just doing that.
I think that's a great idea.
You know, you get out, you have fun, you meet people, you do different things, you go into different parts of the city you wouldn't normally get into, and you have fun. Right, that's the whole point.
Let me ask you this, Will. Are there others like you who follow 16 Candles around?
Oh, they have. You know, they've been around for like a dozen years.
Yeah, I know the name.
And there are, let's put it this way, I've come to recognize faces.
You have like a meetup there.
They literally have a following of probably hundreds of people that come to see them. One thing they always do at every show is they ask, how many people have seen this before? And you see all these hands go up in the crowd. Usually more than half the folks that are watching have already seen them before. Because they play all over the place, and they're a fun band. Who doesn't like to have fun in the summer on a beautiful summer night, right?
One more then. So what's the best neighborhood or area that you've discovered in following 16 Candles?
You know, this is going to sound goofy because it's nowadays it's so ubiquitous. I've never really gone and hung out down in River North. And I went to one of the festivals down there and saw all the different great restaurants and stuff that are in that area. And like, hey, you know, maybe I should come down to River North more often. That kind of thing. Or I can't remember when was the last time I went out to Oak Lawn for something. You know, I live up north in Evanston, so, you know, when am I going to be in Oak Lawn? That kind of thing.
Well, there you go. That sounds like a really fun band. That's a good idea and a good way to get yourself out to see different parts of our city. That's a very, very cool idea. Thanks very much for the call, Will. Hi, Daryl. You're on WGN.
Hi, Steve and Amy.
Hello.
Hi.
What is your big plan for the summer?
My big plan this year is to participate in the Cubs or watch the Cubs win the World Series.
Now, participate? Are you a third baseman or what position do you play?
No, I do work at the ballpark.
Oh, nice.
Do I know you, Daryl?
Yes, you do, Steve.
Nice to talk to you. Yeah, so you must be pretty excited.
Well, yeah, it's been an exciting season. A lot of happy fans and a lot of great memories. But I wanted to mention that I just got back from Prague.
Oh,
and
no kidding.
The people who are going with you are so fortunate because it is such an exciting city.
Yeah, we actually leave a month from today. And now, did you spend euros or you have to spend the local Czech currency, right?
We spent the Czech currency, yes. Although a lot of places take euros. And, of course, we use credit cards.
Okay, so let's go back to Wrigley Field. I got into a texting fight with a buddy of mine early this season because it seemed to me that even though they were selling a lot of tickets, that there weren't a lot of butts in the seats and that maybe we'd become so comfortable that we weren't going to worry until the weather got warm. Did you notice that or am I all wet on that?
No, I think even from the beginning of this year, as we played a little better, there were more butts in the seats. Of course, the cold weather always affects it. But the thing we've noticed this year is even when we're behind, people stay.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And, of course, now with better weather, of course, we're filled up every day, and it's really exciting.
Well, and, Daryl, we've only been behind two times this year.
Yeah. And today will be a special day because there will be all sorts of special military and others other events for Memorial Day or Decoration Day, as we remember it from when we were kids.
Well, listen, soak it all in and enjoy the summer, Dale. It's great to talk to you.
I will. Yeah, you too, and have a great time in being in product.
Thanks, will do. All right, you're listening to 720 WGN.
720 WGN, Amy Guth and Steve Bertrand in for Bill and Wendy today. Thanks for spending part of your Memorial Day holiday with us. Lots to get to on the show today. Many, many topics here looking at us, but there's one that is super, super interesting. This story, I don't know if you've seen this. I'm sure you have, because it's kind of everywhere.
Yeah, I don't think you could be near a TV and not have seen the video.
Right. It's a story of this gorilla enclosure at a zoo in Ohio, and this small boy got into the enclosure, and the gorilla ended up having to be euthanized. And there's fascinating stuff going on around it. There's this petition against the parents, people demanding that they will be charged, and the police saying they won't. And then there's people, you know, talking about the zoo, and there's a vigil happening for the gorilla. There's so much going on around this story, and it is really, really interesting. So we have our good friend Ryan Breaux with us to talk about all the latest on the
Gorilla thing. The vigil just happened this afternoon. There were only a handful of people. I mean, it wasn't really the outcry of support. Obviously, look, no one wins
no
in this situation.
The gorilla,
no one's against the gorilla. Obviously, this has been pretty traumatic, but I think that people are starting to, now that they've seen the full video, now that the full video has been released, are starting to understand a little bit more about the situation that this boy was in. I mean, if you watch just that one little snippet shot, it looks like the gorilla's just kind of standing over the boy, almost mm-hmm. protecting the boy. But if you see what happened earlier, the gorilla actually grabs the boy and pulls the boy by his leg in through the water. And then we see the gorilla kind of, you know, I mean, it's a 400-pound beast. I mean, it may not even know its own strength compared to a 3-year-old boy. So, the video is very dramatic, hard to watch, and you know, a lot of animal experts, including Jack Hanna, have come out and said 1,000% would have done the same thing.
I heard Jack Hanna interviewed earlier today, and he said, you know, you had to do that the animal felt threatened, because I guess his mate had been taken out of the enclosure, taken into a cage. Mm-hmm. People were yelling and screaming.
Exactly. Obviously, they're trying to get the attention of the zookeeper. So there's this big fury of activity going on 15 feet above the enclosure that the gorilla is noticing, that there's some kind of energy, something that's not right. And so, I mean, things just become very unpredictable at that point.
How did the boy get into the area?
There's only one gap, I guess, between the where the people are and where this enclosure is, and somehow the boy got through some kind of bushed area and then got through the fence and then fell down that 10-foot to 15-foot wall. And you know, obviously the question is now, what's going on with the parents? Why weren't they paying attention? I mean, this is a 3-year-old boy. I've got a 4-year-old. I know how they can just kind of take off on you. They're obviously very relieved that the child is okay, and now the questions begin. The police are going to hold a press conference later this afternoon to see whether or not they're going to pursue any kind of charges.
They're not, are they?
It doesn't sound like it at this point, but I think they want to kind of nip this one in the bud and say once and for all.
And just put it to bed.
Exactly.
We're not going to do it. Do you remember, maybe it was 20 years ago?
1996.
Is that right?
At the Brookfield Zoo, correct?
Yeah, that a child, and I think of a kid I went to high school with, was involved in the rescue somehow. It's in my fuzzy memory. But a young kid got into, was it in the gorilla enclosure again?
Mm-hmm. A little different of a scenario in that one. That one, it did seem like apparently the gorilla kind of almost took care of the child a little bit.
Yeah, as I recall, something like that. But they certainly didn't shoot the gorilla.
No, they did not. And for all of you people saying, well, wait, why can't they just trank this thing? It's 400 pounds, and from everything I'm hearing, it would have taken, even if first of all, two things. The shooting of a tranquilizer dart would have obviously frightened the gorilla, as anyone shooting anything at us would, and then the gorilla becomes even more erratic at that point. Number two, the tranquilizer dart apparently would take like 10 to 15 minutes to set in, and who knows what could happen in that 10 to 15 minutes. You also don't want a 400-pound gorilla falling on top of a 3-year-old boy. Right. I mean, that causes a completely other concern, so... You know, I think it's just kind of sad from everyone's perspective.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many pieces to it that are, you know, that are moving around, and there's like the petition that's come up against the parents. They're demanding that the police charge them. But as you said, anyone that's spent any amount of time around a small child knows they just squirm and move really fast. And it's very easy for a kid to get away from you, even, you know, for the most vigilant parent.
I think most parents would say, well, I would have watched my kid. I would have, you know, and I right. guess unless you're in that situation where you've got maybe someone tugging on you saying, I want ice cream. You never know, I guess. And yeah. really, we didn't see in that video what was going on kind of on the people side of things. You know, we only see the camera pointed down toward the gorilla, enclosure. So we don't really know what was going on behind the scenes.
Didn't the mom say she was watching other kids as well? And
yeah. And to be honest with you, we haven't been formally told who this woman is yet. The name hasn't been released to the child. The name hasn't been released to the family. We're told that one woman did come out on Facebook and kind of defended herself a little bit. We believe that's the mom, but until we know for sure, we won't.
Yeah. I don't want to know.
Yeah.
I mean,
for her own sake, I don't want that out really.
It's interesting to me that people are so angry and they want this woman mm-hmm. charged, but people don't seem to be angry with the zoo for having an exhibit that would allow a four-year-old to climb into.
Well, there is one group that's angry about that, and that's PETA. And I think we all kind of know where PETA's coming from. If you've followed any stories from PETA, they don't want zoos in general. They're not a big fan of having animals in enclosure areas. And even in PETA's statement came out and said, not only do we not like zoos, but they should have had two gates, two fences or two blockades between the people as well as the gorillas. So, you know, they're not thrilled, and I'm sure that now after this has happened, the Cincinnati Zoo will take a look again and see, you know, how right. can we set this up better so this doesn't happen again.
To do things in a new way to mm-hmm. prevent it from happening again. Well, as you said, there is no winner in the story.
The boy, by the way, was taken to the hospital. It sounds like non-life-threatening injuries, minor injuries, was released Saturday night. So as far as mm-hmm. the boy's concerned, had a concussion, maybe some bumps and bruises, but hopefully okay.
And a heck of a story.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember too many stories from when I was three, but this one's been captured on video, and this kid's going to remember that for forever, that's for sure.
For a minute, for sure, yeah.
Our phone number is 312-981-7200. I mean, I guess a couple of questions. One, would you punish the parents in this? Do you think the parents should be held responsible? I'd love to hear your response to that. Or
the zoo.
Or the zoo, yeah. Right. Or where have you lost your kid?
Yeah. Malls, where have you right? Lost, where have you baseball fields, maybe.
Have you lost your own?
No. I have it. Well, you know, my wife has these incredible tentacles that can know where they are at all time, I guess. I probably would have lost them a bunch of times.
When I was a kid, I used to wander off all the time. I drove my mom crazy. I would just always just dart away. She was like, I would let go of your hand for 1 second to pick something off the yeah. shelf, and you were gone.
My son would go, like in Target, mm-hmm. he would hide under the clothes.
Yep.
And then play hide and seek, so then we're yelling for him, and he thinks it's funny.
Just make your heart drop.
We might have lost our daughter once at Ravinia.
Oh God!
But that was last year, and she found her own way home.
Did you see this story about this boy that was with his parents? It was a Japanese family, and they wanted to punish him. They were driving through a wooded area. Did you see this?
No.
He was like throwing. I think they said he was throwing rocks and sticks at things at other cars, and so they made him get out of the car. But then he got lost in this wooded area.
So it was truly get out of this car.
Yeah, I mean, I think they wanted to teach him a lesson.
I think it was one of those, we've all been in that, oh yeah, well, we're leaving right, now, right. we're right. going, yeah. you know, you can stay here, or, you know, maybe it was a get out, and you know, just kind of a phony thing, and then the kid got lost. Yeah, I read a little bit of that story as well.
Yeah, so they, I'm sure, feel terrible about that.
Well, I can't imagine that the mom in this situation hasn't suffered plenty.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, and giving her a citation for... You know, they said
you can hear her screaming in the video. Yeah, you can hear her, and you can hear her trying to communicate with her son. It's going to be fine. Pay attention to me while this is all going on. And I think we all watch that video and we say, oh, my gosh, you know, the first time we watch it, what's going to happen next? This is not going to be good, because all it takes is one swat by that 400-pound gorilla, and that kid would have gone flying 10, 20 feet.
I was reading someone who said, well, the gorilla was obviously taking care of him. He was pulling up his pants. Gorillas don't know from pulling up someone's pants.
Gorillas don't know pants.
Well, we don't know what the mind state. You know, I mean, like I said, that one image that we saw initially where the gorilla looks to be kind of standing over, looking up, and actually picking the boy up. But, you know, we saw the drag before. I mean, the gorilla obviously does not know how to take care of.
We're assigning what we know of humans to gorilla behavior.
Exactly.
Gorillas, All right, 391. 391?
Nope.
Where are we?
312-981.
He's new. He's new here. He's new here.
What do you think should happen in this case? Or maybe where have you lost your children? All of that coming up. Steve Bertrand and Amy Guth filling in for Bill and Wendy on this Memorial Day afternoon.
720 WGN, Amy Guth and Steve Bertrand in for Bill and Wendy today. Thank you for spending part of your afternoon with us. We've been talking about this really unusual and interesting story coming out of Ohio about this boy that got into a gorilla enclosure in the zoo. And there's all these, you know, very impassioned opinions swirling around this story. Some people want to hold the zoo accountable. Some people are angry at the zoo for having to euthanize the gorilla. And people are demanding the parents be charged. The police say they don't want to. There's so much going on. And there's just very, very, you know, people seem like it's a polarizing topic.
Well, yeah, and you keep saying euthanized, which is correct, but I mean they shot him.
Yeah.
I mean they didn't
green
needle him. It wasn't gentle. They shot the gorilla.
They had to shoot him.
And we haven't seen that video, thankfully, but they must have done it in front of the people who were yelling and screaming and everything.
Which is
too
scary as well, because you've got a 3-year-old boy that's there.
Right.
You know.
Right.
The shooting happens. That's pretty traumatic.
And probably
as well.
A lot of other children nearby, you know, they were just there at the zoo that day. Hi, Kevin. You're on WGN.
Hi there. Thanks, you guys, for stepping in today. Your show's great. My feedback would be, you know, I know it was, you guys just mentioned it's a very tenuous situation about even firing a weapon with the child there. I just wonder whether, as far as the zoologists went, they just lost a family member by euthanizing that gorilla. The gorilla was there for a reason to procreate and keep that breed going. I wonder, was it at all a possibility that they could have entered people that are regularly dealing with the gorilla, entered that enclosure and tried to use some type of a stun gun like they do, you know, for police. I know you say it's a 400-pound individual. You know, sometimes they're 300-pound, 350-pound people. Could that have been a possibility that would have helped the young person, would have also allowed that gorilla to stay alive and to stay with his mate to, you know, procreate and continue the life of that particular endangered species.
I think there are a lot of what ifs, right? What if we would have done something differently? And we deal with this in Chicago. What if a police officer would have done this? What if a suspect would have done this instead? I can tell you right now, the zoo didn't really feel like it had a choice. I mean, they've come out and said, we are brokenhearted. They didn't want to take down this gorilla.
Of course
it was a 17-year old, but they said in their statement, the child's life was in danger. A decision had to be made. Now, I didn't point out earlier, the exhibit has been closed. Obviously, they've got a lot to figure out now what to do with the other gorillas and try to regroup after this incident happened. But, you know, as far as other options, maybe moving forward, they'll have something else in place. But really, I mean, they couldn't get at this gorilla until they got the other two out of there. I mean, it's not like you can just walk in and start, you know, and shoot this thing. I mean, they had to first remove the other gorillas out of that enclosure to get in there. So,
I did not see that on the video. I
no, it wasn't on the video.
And Ryan, to your point earlier about how a lot of experts were talking about why they didn't go to a tranquilizer dart or something, mm-hmm. because it would have taken some time, you know, several minutes to go into effect, and who knows what could have happened to the child in that time. So, yeah, I definitely, certainly I also got the sense from the zoo that they are, you know, grieving the loss of a family member, but I think they feel like they did what they had to.
Thanks for the call, Kevin. Sure. A couple of texts from 312. Yes, the parents should be held responsible, and don't let them sue for damages. If they can't control their child, don't take him to the zoo. Another from 773, as far as the euthanized, they cold-blooded murdered him, the texter wrote. And the third from 574, I'm not sure where 574 is, but says, seems that the condition of the kid is being underreported. Now, they called him serious at first, which I don't know how serious he truly was, but he was almost treated and released. Did he spend
He was released on Saturday after the incident happened, hours after Saturday night. We were told a concussion. Obviously, they're not giving out a ton of information. Obviously, bumps and bruises from that fall, the 15-foot fall. But hopefully nothing. The injuries weren't life-threatening. I mean, obviously, right. concussion and the boys... can have long-term effects, as we found out. But, as of now...
He's out of the hospital.
Yeah, he's out of the hospital, right. Yeah. Back with family.
Hi, Randy. You're on WGN.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Just like to point out a few differences between this incident and the incident that happened at Brookfield Zoo a bunch of years back. When the child fell into the grill enclosure in Brookfield, there was a number of grills in the enclosure, but the one that approached the unconscious child, and that was another thing, the child was unconscious after he impacted the ground, was a female gorilla. And this gorilla, whose name I don't remember, I'm sorry, she had recently given birth. Now, the zookeepers trained the gorillas with dolls to begin with, and then later with their actual baby gorillas, that every couple of days or so, you're supposed to carry them over and leave them by a door and then back off to a safe point so the zookeepers can take the baby gorilla out, measure it, check it for health, and then put it back in the enclosure. So this female gorilla saw the unconscious child and treated it like her own baby. She gently picked it up, scared away the males, and then brought it over to that door, set the child down, and backed off to the safe spot, like she had been doing with her baby. And so, completely different setup on behavior, completely different everything. And we got lucky in Chicago. That's all I can say on the matter.
Jack Hanna made reference to that in the interview I heard earlier today, and they didn't flesh it out, but he said something like, in that case back then, and as you were saying, they trained the gorillas in a way that they don't do now. And I don't understand that completely. But
and I wonder why that shift. Why would you not continue that kind of training?
Well, maybe they've become more hands-off as a way to keep these animals more as a part of nature. I mean, look, we want to see the animals in their habitat. And, I think that there had been calls for, as we've seen with circuses, where they've been pulling some of the animals down because people have been saying, well, human interaction isn't what these animals need.
Another texter says the animal, the Brookfield Zoo gorilla, was named Binti, which that sounds familiar to
me. Right.
And I'm reading that gorilla was 150 pounds, so a little bit smaller, although, I mean, still large compared to, but I mean, it's not 400 pounds.
It's always interesting to me that the people who, I mean, it's easier to be really negative on a text, I guess, than a phone call. But here's one from 815, more paying attention to the kids and less selfies. Old school, parents are definitely at fault. Another from 630, where was the mother if she had her child under control? I blame the mother. I wasn't there, but I think
it's
easy to lose a 4-year-old.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's so easy for
a
little kid to just wiggle away from you.
And God knows this mother didn't want her 4-year-old to end up in the
And she
enclosure.
Was physically there. We know that because we heard her screams. We heard her trying to yell out to her son. So she was physically there. It's not like she was gone and he, stayed around in the enclosure while she left.
Right.
So
312-981-7200 is a telephone number if you want to weigh in on this.
Hi, Kathy. You're on WGN.
Well, I wanted to turn this a little bit to how I lost my parents with my 4 siblings.
How old were you?
Once. Well, I think I was probably around 10, and we were at a picnic, a big, huge picnic, a union picnic at Schiller Woods. And I think that I decided that we were going on a hike. So there I was with my 8, 7, and 5-year-old siblings, and we went for a hike. We had absolutely no idea what we were doing. And my poor father was just nuts by the end of about 2 hours because he couldn't find us anywhere.
Wow. And how badly were you punished for that?
We weren't because they were so grateful to see us. They're just like, if you're going for a walk, tell us.
In the future. How much time did your dad spend in jail?
Well, in those days, done. But I remember it was a big union picnic, and my mom had my niece, my baby sister, who is 9 years younger than I am, so I figured I must have been about 10. And I'm sure I was the ringleader, as I usually am.
Taking responsibility for it. Right. Thanks for the call, Kathy. And have a great day.
We wandered around Schiller Park for God knows how long.
Well, you can only wander around Schiller Park for so long, right, Kathy? Then you have to go back.
Well, yeah, you eventually come out. So that's when we did, and then some people found us and brought us back to where we were supposed to be.
Listen, thanks for the call today. I appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right, my friends, we need to take a little break and get you to news and all that good stuff. Thanks to Ryan Burrow, our good friend, for breaking the story down for us and answering questions about the situation that has unfolded and continues to unfold in this zoo in Ohio. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth. Steve Bertrand and I are in for Bill and Wendy today. Thanks for spending part of your Memorial Day with us. We are so happy to have you with us today. You know, most of us say we do not have enough time. I think most of us, all of us probably have said that at some point in our lives of, oh man, I would love to do X, but I just don't have the time. There was a really, really interesting story in the New York Times just the other day about this woman who has written about this at great length. She wrote a book and she's written in the New York Times about this. She logged all of her time for a year to really, really look at what does that mean when I say I don't have enough time? And this is a topic I don't know about you, Steve. I have thought about this topic a whole lot in my own life.
Do you feel that you don't have enough time?
I used to constantly say that. I used to say that all the time. And I really started to, I didn't do it quite as thoroughly as she did, mm-hmm. but I did start to log my time and take accounting of my days. And I made myself switch to kind of a batch process style of working. And that was life changing.
What does that mean, batch?
Well, where I say, okay, for the next 2 hours, I'm only going to work on this. And for the next hour, I'm only going to work on this because I do a lot of different things, as do you.
Sure.
So that way that helps me kind of juggle all those different things and formally switch my brain to different topics.
Well, she broke it down by a half hour through the hour. There was a total, what is it?
Well, in a leap year, I think it was 8,784 hours.
So she broke it down by half hour, and she found that her average work week was about 37 and a half hours a week. Now, that she factors in vacation, so when she was working, she probably spent more than 40 hours, but still, that's not an overwhelming number of hours. She says during the year, she got 8 massages, went for long weekend runs, and all she exercised for 232 and three quarters hours that year. She spent evenings after the kids went to bed sitting out on the porch, reading fashion or gossip magazine, reading total of 327 hours, which is almost an hour a day.
Mm-hmm.
So when she looked back at it, she found that she really had more time than she thought she did. So I was thinking of this yesterday. As I said earlier, I was whining about all the work I had to get done. I got to do this. I got to do that. And I realized that I was rehashing all of this in my head about how much I had yet to do this weekend when I was laying down to take a nap. I'm like,
right.
Wait a minute. You're going to take a nap here. That's a great luxury. And maybe you're not as packed as you think. So really what her point is that if you look at it, and it's all a mental exercise, really. If you examine how you spend your time, think about it, you'll find that you've got a lot more time than you think you do.
And I think for me, it helped me identify time sucks. That of things I could do better. And a friend of mine, she is very, very interested in this topic. And she started teaching some classes about it. And she had some really interesting tips about reclaiming some time. And there are so many little things that I've learned from her that have really added, I swear, years to my life.
Well, if this is your experience, you want to talk about it, our phone number is 312-981-7200.
It's your first day, bless your heart.
312-981-7200 is our phone number, 312-981-7200. I'm sorry, time sucks?
Yeah.
Like what's
just the things where, I just need to post this one little thing on Facebook. Oh, it's Bertrand's birthday. I'm going to go wish him happy birthday. 2 hours later, he's still on Facebook.
Right.
Things like that.
I do that when I sit down on my computer to do travel emails or mm-hmm. things like that. And you're right, it'll start with one, and then that can lead to another. Then you see, well, I'm this one. But if I think it's more of the mentality of doing it, because if I want to do it, it's not a waste of time, right?
Right, which leads me to the best thing I have ever read around this topic, and that was the idea of when you say, oh, I'm too busy, I can't do it, try this shift. And this was very powerful in my own life. Make yourself say, it's not a priority, instead of I'm too busy, and fascinating things start to happen.
because you start to do those things, or you find time for them?
You're claiming a little, you're taking a little more responsibility. It's no longer I'm at the mercy of my calendar. It's saying I'm a grown adult and I choose to do my calendar in a certain way. And basically what you're saying is I choose to be overwhelmed. And then that makes you change your ways pretty quickly without even necessarily doing anything, you know, purposeful. It will start to shift it for you because it's embarrassing to say I'm at the mercy of my calendar and I can't control my life.
Well, but it's easier to say, isn't it, than to take responsibility and say, mm-hmm. I choose not to do this.
Yeah.
I could find a way to do it, but I'm choosing not to do it.
And I think we are in, we were talking about this on Saturday night, on the Saturday night special. We were talking about vacation and the idea of how many Americans left vacation on the table last year. It was 41% did not take a single vacation day last year.
And they had
the financial means to do so. They could have. They just chose not to because either their workplace culture didn't feel comfortable or something like that. And so I think we're in this culture of busy where how many people have you seen lately? Hey, man, how are you? I haven't seen you in a long time.
Oh,
how you
I'm
been?
Busy.
So right. Busy. It's almost this, it's almost the, you know, the default answer for everything that it's, that we're supposed to say, that if you don't say it, there's something wrong with you.
Well, I think that's Laura Vanderkamp's point that it's the fault and it's not reality. I mean, obviously, we are very busy, and I do have a lot of things I have to
Absolutely.
Do. But maybe half is the wrong word, or maybe choose. I have a lot of things that I choose to do.
Right. And I think even just using that shift in your language makes shifts happen in your life. It certainly did for me. I mean, I get really surprisingly upset when people, because I do a lot of different kind of stuff, when people say this to me all the time, when do you sleep? When in fact, I take sleep really seriously. I don't function well without sleep, so I take it very seriously. And so I feel like I've let people down, especially like a young person. I'm sending the wrong message if people think I don't sleep. So to me,
because if people think you're so busy and frazzled that you haven't factored in sleep.
Right. When in fact, I really aggressively say no to a lot of things.
Right.
I mean, my motto is if it's not a hell yeah, it's a hell no, right? That's
well, I think I'm just the opposite then. My first reaction is hell no. You know,
that's
I don't have
default.
Time,
yeah.
I can't do it, hell no.
Yeah.
When it should be a little more hell yeah.
Sure. But I think that probably saves you a lot of angst because I think some people feel like they have to say yes to everything or they have a lot. I mean, I think what the more common problem is, it's less that you feel like you have to and more that you probably are, there are things you genuinely want to do. You know, if it's exciting and it's fun, it's hard to say no to something when you want to say yes to it.
Our phone number is 312-981-7200. A 215 Pew Research survey found 9 in 10 working mothers said they felt rushed all the time. And you don't feel rushed anymore. Is that what you're telling me?
I mean, occasionally, but I don't. I made some radical life changes, though, to address the idea of busy because I was really feeling burned out.
Those radical changes were in your head or in what you did?
Both.
Okay.
But in my head first because I had been trying to think of this. Part of it is my grandfather. I talk about my grandfather so much on this station, but he really has had a very big impact in my life. And he, around my birthday, he always asked me, what did you do the most this year? What do you want to do next year? And he called me out one year. He said, you know what, kiddo, for the last 4 years, you've given me almost the same answer. I know you love your job. And at the time, I was sitting in a cubicle.
Mm-hmm.
He said, but do you want to spend your whole life in a cubicle? And I'm like, well, I mean, the work is fun. And so it made me think about, well, he's right. I do want to do more. That's not why I signed up for journalism was to sit in a cubicle. It was to tell big truths and, you know, give voice to the voiceless and talk about interesting things. So, I mean, it was an epiphany but it was a slow process over several years for me.
We had a text from 773. For 16 years, I had 5 weeks vacation. I used all of it every year.
Good for you.
I can't imagine leaving vacation. I mean, I think there was a couple years where I might have left a day or two, but that was only because I couldn't squeeze it in at the end.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. That's so foreign to me.
Yeah. Dr. John Duffy was on the program with me Saturday night and, you know, regular contributor to the station and certainly to my show. He was talking about what really your brain needs to function optimally. And he said, even just a generation ago, within 1 to 2 days, you would start to actually settle into that vacation. But now, just given the high level of dopamine constantly happening in our brains with every like ping and ding and tweet happening on our phones and our screens, that he said it really neurologically takes 4 to 5 days to start to calm down for a vacation.
Well, I will say this. I cannot imagine going on vacation without access to my email and my texting because it becomes overwhelming. I mean, I don't know how many, I get
a lot of email,
hundreds of emails a day.
Yeah, and I have so a cool. I have two cool tools. I use Boomerang and Sane Inbox, and that has changed the way I email so much.
How does that work?
Boomerang. Well, I used to use my inbox as my to-do list, and so I'd leave an email in there because I need to remember to get back to it. But Boomerang is like a free service that if I'm emailing you and I know that I need to follow up on it, I click a little checkbox at the bottom and set a timer, basically. So I can delete the email, but in 2 days, it'll come back and say, don't forget, check in with Steve Bertrand or whatever. It'll do that so I can get rid of it, and it's out of my
face. For me, and I'm not complaining, although it might sound like it, because of where we work, we get so much reporter chatter.
Yeah.
And I delete 98% of my emails, but mm-hmm. I kind of need to see 96% of them to delete it.
Right.
So if I don't check my email all the time, it's like playing a video game. I'll turn on my phone and just delete, 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 delete.
Yeah, I do that.
Here's a text from 708. I recently deactivated my Facebook account because it had become a time suck. I intend to do this for about a month, but we'll see. Now, I have a fellow coworker, or former coworker, I should say, who I'm like, I wonder what Justin's up to. And I started looking for Justin. He moved away a few years ago, and I couldn't find him on Twitter. I knew he'd been on Twitter. I couldn't find him on Facebook. I was concerned he died.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He just dropped out for a while. Mm.
The thing I started changing about Facebook and Twitter is I put it in a different browser window than the one I'm working in. So it's not like a tab sitting there when I see, the number next to the word Facebook, it'll say like 5. It'll show you have 5 updates.
Oh, right.
I put in a different window and minimize that window. So I just check in like once or twice during that time working.
For me, Facebook is all about, it's output for me, not input.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm putting stuff out on Facebook for people, but I tend not to get too sucked into, because I really only care about myself, Amy. I don't really care what other people are doing.
The rumors are true. We have confirmed it.
There's no rumor. Another text. Amy, please tell us more about your friend who teaches time management courses. Where does she teach? Is there a website or social media
yes,
page?
Yes. Her name is Saya Hillman. I've had her on I've had her on the show before. And go to macandcheeseproductions.com, and she teaches all these cool productivity classes and holds a lot of really neat events. And you can find her there.
All right. What do you think on this? Our phone number is 312-981-7200. We're going to take a quick break. Get right back at it after this on 720 WGN. You're listening to Steve Bertrand and Amy Guth filling in for Bill and Wendy on this Memorial Day. The Bill and Wendy will be back tomorrow. Kevin Richter is here. He's been working very hard all day, as he does each and every day, trying to make Bill and Wendy sound as good as they do. Mike is on a phone line. He called about, we were talking about dropping out and managing your time. And Mike, you sort of gave up on Facebook?
Well, all social media. So I've been on MySpace since probably 2002. And LiveJournal, and then when I was a freshman in college, Facebook came out the fall of 2004. So you had to have a .edu address, and it was just for college kids.
Right.
So we all jumped on it and loved it. And after my 82-year-old grandmother friended me on Facebook, I kind of started looking at things, and my wife and I decided that for our New Year's resolution, we were going to get off Facebook for 30 days for this year. So I deactivated all social media and haven't looked back.
So when did you do it?
January 1st of this year.
Okay.
So almost 12 years on Facebook. However many friends. I found myself getting mad at people that I hadn't talked to in 10 years because of their post. And I just decided we didn't need it. So my stress level has dropped. I'm more productive at home. I'm more productive at work.
Are you less in tune with what other people are doing?
I don't really care. To be honest with you, I mean, I work in healthcare. My wife and I just bought a home out in the country. We don't even have internet or cable at our new house. And we just, she reactivated it. She's a stay-at-home mom, and she's the local mother of preschoolers group coordinator, the local moms coordinator. So she uses social media a little bit more between her friends. But I don't know. I'm more productive at work. I'm more productive at home, and I don't really miss it. Any news I get from the I get from the radio.
Well, we like that.
Oh,
part.
God bless you for that.
I listen to WGN on the way to work and on the way home, and that's my news source every day.
I think there's a happy balance because I do. I mean, it's almost at this time. It's like saying I don't accept the postal service. I don't accept mail.
Yeah, it's
so. You know, I mean, and I'm not putting you down for it, Mike, but I just think it's the way now that we've come to interact and communicate that it's kind of hard to walk away from all together.
I feel like it's like walking down Main Street and checking in on all your people.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is my wife was like, well, you know, how do we keep in contact? Because my family lives in Kentucky and Florida. And so we had a Facebook family page and whatever. And she was like, well, how are you going to keep in contact with them? And I was like, the phone. We send emails. We text. So there's still ways that I can connect with the important people in my life. But if I haven't talked to you in person in 10 years, why am I letting what you're putting on Facebook affect my day and my, you know, my lifestyle?
It's funny what you say. I mean, I do know people who get angry with, you know, because people get really political on Facebook. It's like text when we're getting...
Right. No, you know what? It's not the subject matter. What it is that we've lost the ability to engage in respectful discourse. It's not the subject
matter. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. That's what I tell people is that we've lost the ability for you and me to have a conversation. I believe one thing, you believe something else, and it doesn't make either one of us right or wrong, but one of us feels like we have to win. And when you get on Facebook, that's what people do. Whereas when I talk to someone face-to-face, I feel like we can have a normal conversation. If you start to agree with me, great. If I start to agree with you, awesome. But we've just lost the art of conversation.
But I will say this. There's also, I love catching up with people who I haven't seen for 30 years or 40 years and people who I wouldn't call. I mean, there was a few weeks ago, I looked up and outside this window, this very window, was a guy I went to grade school with who I haven't seen in forever. And, you know, we recognized each other, we waved, and then I found him on Facebook and we exchanged a couple notes. And, you know, that was a really cool thing. And this was, you know, Ricky, I would have never touched base with Ricky again had I not, Rick by now, had I not done that. So, I mean, I think that's a big plus to Facebook.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Thanks for the call, Mike. Appreciate you listening.
Thanks for taking my call.
All right. I mean, I see what he's getting
at. Oh, I do too. I support him in many ways.
But. Yeah, but I also think it depends on your industry. And what you do for a living. Like, there's no way in the world you and I
could ever
get
Facebook.
Off of social media. But I really think there is, it pains me when I see people saying, that's it, I'm deactivating my Facebook, I can't stand this for an election year. It's not about that. It's really about it's a cultural moment in which we have really lost the ability to talk about things we disagree over without empathy and respect for the other person.
So I'm trying to put that into real world experience because this hasn't happened to me, but I have friends who say, well, I can't stand it when Joe Bob starts talking politics on Facebook, you know, and about how maybe it is. Maybe you're right that, you know, Joe Bob is saying people who disagree with me are idiots or are wrong or whatever. But it's like, well, my friendship with Joe Bob isn't political when we're together.
Yeah.
So I don't want to see the political stuff on Facebook.
Yeah, that could be right. But I think that it's really about a communication style. I had this epiphany kind of recently about myself that I'm really, because someone accused me of they were like, you just want everyone to be right. I was like, no, because it was like, what is it you want me to think? What is it you want us to think? And I said, I want you to think for yourself. I just want us to discuss. To me, it's not about, I want everyone to think what you think or what I think. My end game here is the discussion point in the middle.
Yeah, well, we don't discuss very much.
I think is it has cultural impacts in many deep and real ways that some of which I think are damaging and dangerous, especially in an election year. The fact that we can't discuss issues with each other. We just go, I'm voting for this one. I'm voting for this one. Shut up. Ah! Like, that's it.
During the next spot break, I'll tell you who you should vote for.
Okay, thanks. Great.
Sure. You're listening to 720 WGN. Thank you, Kim. Steve Bertrand here, along with Amy Guth, filling in for Bill and Wendy on this Memorial Day afternoon. It's 2:36. And 2:35, I should say. So, you know, just during a few minutes here, I would love for you to give us a call and just share a story or a memory of the vet who you are remembering today on this Memorial Day. I got a text from 847. I'm thinking about my dad, Richard Schufelt. He was a Navy pilot in Vietnam. He passed away 2 years ago, and I miss him every day. You know, and that's, I think, a nice way to commemorate Memorial Day, just to give words to your memories a little bit.
Indeed. There's a you know, so many stories. You know, we were talking about Facebook a little bit on the last segment, but there's so many powerful stories and, you know, beautiful, touching tributes and stuff that I've seen today. People talking about veterans that they have they have lost that are quite touching and quite sweet. But my favorite one was a woman posted a sign in a bar and she said, "This was my brother's favorite bar in the world."
Nice.
And so she prepaid a bar tab of however many $100 or so and said, "Please have a beer on my brother today because that would have made him so very happy."
I love that.
Great.
Yeah, what a great way to do it.
I think the memorial should fit the person, which I like very much.
You know, my college roommate, it was a funny situation. When I was a sophomore, a bunch of friends, we got divided up. And so I was thrown into this room in Trader Hall with ROTC. Student.
Mm.
I was not a ROTC guy.
I was going to say,
no.
I don't think you
and
were.
Nick and I we weren't oil and water because we got along, but we were just completely different people.
I'm trying to imagine like freshman college
really,
Bertrand.
Yeah, it was really an odd couple situation, but he was a great guy. And so we had a mutual fondness for each other, even though we never hung out. And in my mind, I always knew when I had kids or whatever that I would reconnect with this guy, Nick Ferentz, mm-hmm. because he just was a good guy. He just was my type of good guy, right? And I think it was the same for me and him. And so it was probably been 15 years ago or so. We got the bulletin from school about, you know, the class updates. And I see in the bulletin that Nick was killed. And it just took the wind out of me mm-hmm. because even though we didn't stay in contact, I really believed that we would be in contact mm-hmm. again one day. And Nick didn't die in combat. He died, he was flying. He was a Marine pilot and he died in a training exercise in California. So, you know, I think of Nick, I think of, you know, all kinds of friends and family who I knew Brian Johnson was a young kid who I grew up with, and he fought in the first Gulf War and came back and died way too early mm-hmm. here in the States. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. I'd like to hear from you about who you're remembering on this Memorial Day. Joe, welcome to WGN.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, how are we doing?
Good. What are your memories?
I have two gentlemen that I would like to honor today. One being my father, who is also Joseph Metkovic, and one being a friend of mine from Naperville that I went to school with, Mr. Skip Sachs.
What was his name?
Skip,
okay.
Sachs. And I had the privilege, being a Legionnaire, to do a stint of guarding the moving wall while it was here in Illinois. And I ran across Skip's name on that wall, so they made a tracing for me before I left and gave it to me, and I stood at the wall for 2 minutes and presented arms to Skip in his memory. And my dad, who is now deceased, was a World War II MP. And because he knew Polish, being from Berwyn, he captured 3 Nazi spies attempting to blow up the ammo dump in town.
Wow.
In a French cafe.
Wait, because he spoke Polish and he understood what they were saying?
The Nazis were speaking Polish
okay.
and talking about blowing up the ammo dump. And my father, being a military policeman, with an Australian partner, told him, "Grab your carbine, we're making an arrest." And bingo, he captured 3 Nazi spies. If you go to the U.S. Army Museum, you will see a picture that appeared in the Suburban Life newspaper of my father with those 3 Nazi spies.
It's in the museum?
Yeah. It was in the Suburban Life newspaper in 1941.
Well, Joe, that's what we're talking about, and I'm glad that you called and participated in that this Memorial Day afternoon. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you, gentlemen. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You've been called worse than a gentleman, haven't you?
I've been called way worse than a gentleman.
Our phone number is 312-981-7200. I have to pause every time I say it. Steve has called. Steve, welcome to 720 WGN.
Hi, Steve.
Hi. Happy Memorial Day.
Thank you.
On the moving wall and the regular wall,
Bruno Hockmuth is my general. Dean Armstrong is my senior drill instructor. Lee Jarvis was in my boot camp platoon. Bill Nosek was on my high school football team. Dan Fullwider was my best friend in electronics school. Unfortunately, they're all on the wall, as is Gilbert Diaz from New York, who I had the displeasure of having to go to Graves Identification and identify. Mm-hmm. And do we remember him? I think about it every day. And in case you didn't know, Vietnam, for a lot of us, is yesterday. It's today, and it'll be tomorrow. And when I'm by myself, I just cry a lot.
Still.
But fortunately, I got family. And we're going to Disney World this week, so we're happy.
You know, Steve, when we started this show, Amy and I, we were talking about how you address each other on Memorial Day. And, you know, I said I wasn't altogether comfortable by saying Happy Memorial Day. Here you are, someone who served and who lost so many people, and you started your phone call by saying Happy Memorial Day. So
how do you feel about that?
I think that I'm happy that a lot of my brothers are alive. I think I'm sad about the way the VA treats us. It took me a long time, and finally the VA decided, yeah, I was, you know, my body and everything was kind of screwed up. And, of course, after they gave me a very large disability ruling, then they had me see a shrink, and she says, you have PTSD. And I'm thinking to myself, you got to be kidding me. Everybody who has been in combat has PTSD. But the good thing is we all have black humor. We can laugh at each other. Cochran was at a golf outing, and he talked about it the other day. I don't know if you guys heard it. But he said this wounded warrior stood up to the tee. And he teed off. Now, this man was missing an arm and a leg. He teed off, and he shanked it perfectly into a water hazard. And from the gallery behind everybody, some guy yelled out, "You suck!" And Cochran snapped his head around, wondering what's going on here. Except the guy that yelled was missing both of his arms and his legs. That's our black humor. We live every day with each other.
Well, Steve,
I just saw a woman at the store. She was wearing a Marine T-shirt, brand new Marine T-shirt. Her son had gave it to her. So I said, "Hey, Mom, Semper Fi." And she says, "Hey, Semper Fi." And I said, "By the way, I saw a great bumper sticker one time. The only thing that's tougher than a U.S. Marine is his mother."
Well, I'm sure there are a lot of moms thinking of their children today. Steve, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you for the time.
You bet.
Bye.
Back to the texts. I'm thinking of my father, William Kearns, today. He was one of the troops who liberated Dachau. He passed away 17 years ago on Saturday. I would like to honor my dad, Tom Goss, World War II and Korean War Marine pilot, disabled veteran as well, died in 2014 at the age of 90, an honest, kind, and loving man. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. We would like to help you remember, or perhaps you should help us remember on this Memorial Day. We'll continue that after this on 720 GN.
Hey, it's Amy Guth and Steve Bertrand. We're in for Bill and Wendy today. Thanks for spending part of your Memorial Day with us. We are most grateful to join you in your cars and in your homes, in your apps, in your earbuds, all of those things. Thanks so much for tuning in. So, you know what starts tonight, Steve?
Summer.
Also.
What?
The remake of the Roots series.
So I've been seeing billboards for that. Now, is it the actual, the remaking, is it the same scripts and everything, or is it a different?
That's unclear. I don't know the answer. I think it is. I think it's pretty close to it, the original.
So Kunta Kinte.
Yeah.
Wow.
And there's some very powerful imagery that is going along with those ads. There's a web ad there's like words written on a guy's face with gold paint. It's very powerful looking.
Well, the original Roots, which would have been, what, mid-70s probably? 77, I'm just looking at it.
Yeah.
Was, you know, groundbreaking and really...
Oh, yeah.
innovative and all of that for then. I can only imagine, you know, 40 years later, how much, I don't know that I'm going to watch it, but I bet it's really good.
You know what I've noticed is really interesting? A lot of young people who were not around for that.
For the first roots?
Or even, you know, whose parents weren't necessarily tuned into it. I've noticed a lot of like Generation Z and millennial folks rewatching the original Roots because they feel like they need context to see this new one.
So they're going to school a little bit ahead of the one?
Yeah. Huh. Which other people are saying you don't necessarily need to have seen the original in order to connect with the new one. I'm going to watch it. I think it will be really interesting.
What, it's on what channel? History?
I think it's History. Yeah, I think it's a History Channel. And they do such a good job with, you know, with their programming.
Documentaries, do they?
Yeah.
I'm smiling because sometimes they're kind of cheesy on the History Channel.
I think some of their military history ones
are
a little cheesy.
Right, that's what I'm thinking of,
yeah, but because I think they tend to want to lighten heavy things, but I don't think that always lands very well.
But there's big names in it, right? Forrest Whitaker is in it. Jonathan Rhys Meyers is in it. Will you watch it?
Yeah, I'm going to watch it. I'm not a big TV watcher, but I'll probably like DVR it and sit around and watch it later.
Okay.
It online.
All right.
But I think it's a very important piece of American pop culture, you know, the original Roots.
Right.
Series.
Okay. So what's that's an interesting thing you say, because the first Roots was about a very important
event.
American time.
Right.
And this Roots, you seem to make it in reference to the 1970s Roots, right?
Well,
rather than
I'm
about slavery.
Well, no, I'm differentiating the subject matter with the piece of
no,
media
I get
that it,
it
is.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to watch it. Now you're going to make me watch it.
I'm going to make you watch it. But, you know, I also think it'll be very interesting to compare the two. And so I'm glad to see people like rewatching the old one, even people that have seen it rewatching just to kind of have it fresh in their minds.
But I would imagine the old one looks so dated now.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting because we're in a different cultural moment. The way we talk about race issues and the whole narrative of that, I think, is so different. I was talking about this with someone recently because we were thinking about I think it was Ro Khan actually, but we were talking about how if you take Gone with the Wind and if you take Amistad and put them all together, essentially
a trilogy.
No, but if you compare the three,
okay.
But essentially three things all made essentially about the same thing, but what vastly different points of view, all made in a very different time that treated the subject matter so differently,
right,
and treated the historical retelling so differently.
Or 7 Years a Slave.
Right. Oh, that's another
good
one.
Better
than
Amistad. Maybe
right.
Even.
Right. That's an even better example. Yeah. So I think it's really interesting when you look at.
I like that. So the base story is the same.
Right.
But the reflection in the era that we're telling the story or hearing the story is completely different.
In the case of Gone with the Wind, you're taking this moment in history, but retelling it from a 1938 perspective.
Right.
And then you're taking essentially the same topic, this historical event of great angst and tragedy, and retelling it in a 2016 perspective. And I just think it's really interesting, and not only a different time perspective, but there's always so many different sides of every story. You know, I often say we often start the American history story at Plymouth Rock, but in fact it was thousands of years prior. We just don't talk about that story often.
What happened prior to Plymouth
Well,
Rock?
We don't talk
no,
about it. Like,
just giving
you,
you
know
your,
what
yeah,
I mean.
Yeah.
Don't be that guy. Come on.
312-981-7200 is a telephone number. Are you going to watch Roots? That's interesting. You know, I hadn't really considered the fact that I would watch it for a couple of reasons. One, maybe I'm not in tune with it enough. So I kind of saw that it was out there, mm-hmm. but I wasn't sure. But I think maybe there's ads on this radio station now where I've been hearing about it.
Yeah.
And hearing about the cast. And Forrest Whitaker is good in everything he does. So.
Oh my gosh. That guy could do like a detergent commercial and move people. I mean, he's so good at what he does.
Okay. I was in New York once to interview an author. Dan Brown, right? Who wrote, okay. And so I'm in a Starbucks before the interview going over my notes and stuff. And Forrest Whitaker's in the Starbucks.
Oh, did you say anything to him?
I asked if I shared the table with him and then I talked to him about acting. No, I didn't say anything to him. But I'm sitting there, I'm like, you know, there's a chance because that was about the time of the Idi Amin movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What was it? The Last King of Scotland?
I think that was
right.
It, yeah.
And I'm like, I could say something, but no. It's New York. You don't do that.
Right.
Chicago, maybe.
Chicago, we definitely would. I briefly lived in New York before I moved to Chicago in 2001, and I loved always seeing celebrities, but I always saw them doing something weird. I never felt like I could approach a celebrity because I felt like I would embarrass them.
Or yourself.
or myself, which right. I have done before. Right. Like I saw Tony Bennett in a drugstore, but he had like a box of laxatives in his hand. So I was like, I don't really want to walk up to him right now and say, you know.
That would have been bad form, I think. I think you made the right decision there, Amy.
Yeah. I saw Al Pacino walking down the street singing, though. I thought that was kind of cool. He's got a delightful voice.
Is he?
Yeah.
All in New York.
All in New York.
All right.
Oh, and Haley Mills and I had the same bank, so I saw her at the bank a lot.
How long did you live in New York?
A couple years.
Really? Yeah. How long ago?
I moved here in 2001. The very end of 2001.
Okay. Well, our phone number is 312-981-7200 if you've ever seen Amy Guth in a restaurant
out
here
in the world
Chicago.
Doing something stupid.
Right. And you were afraid to approach her. No need to worry.
Well, yeah, sure. That's a thing that's going to happen.
Do you want to talk about some dirty words?
I always want to talk about dirty words. Well, there was an interesting list. I don't know. We can't really share all of them, but there was an interesting Listverse. Do you know that site? Listverse.com?
Listverse. I've heard of it.
It's just an entire website full of lists, and I love lists, so it's a cool site. But there's a piece on there that kind of caught my eye that was kind of funny and weird and scandalous, and it was, you know how like language evolves really quickly,
sure.
And something that means one thing to one generation means something totally different. Great example is my grandparents have a bridge that where they kissed for the first time. And every time they go over this bridge, they kind of elbow each other and it's cute. And I said something like, hey, that's a bridge where you made out with grandma. And my grandfather was really horrified because to him, making out meant something very different.
It was a terrible thing.
Yeah. He was like, she was a virtuous woman when we married. I was like, what are you saying? Because to him, you know, he thought I was implying that they had hooked up and on this bridge.
Well, I was just going to use the phrase hooked up because right. That's generational too. We're going to hook up at the Cubs game. Really?
Right. That's true. Yeah. That's very true. That is a great example of that. But this takes a look at words that quite a long time ago meant something very, very different. I think one of the cleanest ones that I can't really even talk about is the word fundamental.
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 Is a dirty word.
We believe that it means forming a necessary base or core of central importance.
It's fundamental.
It's fundamental to the topic we are discussing, whatever. But ancient Romans, like the idea like that the Latin word that eventually became the word fundamental.
Fundamentus.
It specifically refers to your rear end.
Really?
Yes.
So fundamental, well, I don't quite get that at all.
Well, they break it all down, and it's kind of a fun look at language and how language evolves, which I think is interesting, especially when you put Latin into it and how Latin words evolve and what they really, really mean.
So have you brought to the show a list that you can't read?
Kind of. I mean, here are the lists. Here are the words on this list, and I can hint at fundamental is on there. Orchid is on there.
Orchid.
Mastodon is on there.
Wait, what? Can you tell us what orchid is?
It does not have to do with a lady. It's got to do with a dude.
Okay.
Which is not what I would have guessed.
No.
Because it's a lady parts looking flower, right?
Mastodon, you said?
Mastodon. I don't know how in the world I could possibly say on the air, but it does not at all refer to a massive prehistoric beast like we think that it does. But in fact, it does refer to a creature, but not... Not
okay.
Weird. A creature that does something we can't talk about on the radio. Amazon, we often say like for a tall, tall woman.
Mm-hmm. Bill Leff loves Amazon women. I don't know if you've heard those stories.
Well, he in fact is perhaps insulting them a bit.
Well, yeah.
Because originally it refers to having a flat chest.
An Amazon woman?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, according to Listverse.
Well, that'd be a good place to take a break, I think.
On that note.
You're listening to 720 WGN.